It's good to have you with us this hour on The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. When people in Hawaii got an alert of an imminent missile attack over the weekend, part of the terror was that the idea of the threat wasn't remote. North Korea has been busy over the last year testing ballistic missiles with longer and longer ranges, now with the ability to reach the United States. And the question for the rest of the world, how to slow down or stop North Korea on its nuclear march? Well, foreign ministers from some 20 countries are meeting in Vancouver today with that very problem in mind. The United States is pushing for enforcement of tougher sanctions as the best deterrent for North Korea. Many other countries are looking for engagement. Well, back in September, a spokesman for North Korea's Sanctions Damage Investigation Committee insisted that those sanctions cause a colossal amount of damage to his country, but that they haven't stopped North Korea from becoming a nuclear power. So we put the question to experts, are sanctions on North Korea working? Anthony Ruggiero is a senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. He spent 17 years as a U.S. government official and an expert on sanctions, and he participated in nuclear talks with North Korea. Anthony Ruggiero, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
How long has North Korea been under economic and trade sanctions, and why do they appear not to have worked?
Well, you know, you can trace targeted financial sanctions against North Korea back to at least 2005. There were certainly sanctions before that time, but 2005 and just after it was a renewed focus on North Korea's nuclear weapons programs. Of course, they tested their first nuclear weapon in 2006. And part of the reason why it has not worked is a quantitative and a qualitative reason. The quantitative is we just simply have not had enough sanctions against North Korea. You know, since February 2016, sanctions have more than doubled, which, you know, really cuts against the myth from some folks that there was not more to sanction or that North Korea had been sanctioned out. Because, of course, that's only 2 years ago. And then the second one is qualitative. So the qualitative is, you know, are we going after North Korea's international business? And are we going after non-North Koreans that are facilitating Pyongyang's sanctions evasion? And up until recently, up until this administration, the answer had been no. And this administration deserves credit for doing that. But, of course, they haven't gone far enough. So, you know, it's part of the back and forth on why sanctions haven't really achieved their goal yet.
Well, let's talk about what we are sanctioning now within and without North Korea. What's the basic strategy? What are we cutting off? What are we putting pressure on?
Right. So now, you know, we've really moved toward targeting commodities. It started really at targeting the revenue that was directly related to the weapons programs and the revenue that was helpful for that. And now that has moved toward commodities such as coal or oil and other commodities. You know, in the end, North Korea still needs items for its weapons programs overseas. There's less of those items that they need now, so that's an area that can be cut off. And North Korea relies on this revenue stream, whether it's legitimate items like coal, or now those are legal items, but at least they're an actual item, or they're counterfeit items like cigarettes or drugs or other things that they've done in the past.
Anthony, let's talk about the humanitarian cost of sanctions. How do we weigh that cost, you know, weakening the economy in North Korea, food shortages, with the desire, the need to force North Korea to a point where they feel an incentive to negotiate? How do we think that through?
Right. I think we have to evaluate North Korea for how it is and not how we want it to be. I think that there are a lot of amazing humanitarian organizations out there who have a singular focus on making the lives of the North Korean people better. And the unfortunate thing here is that the North Korean regime couldn't care less about that. The North Korean regime does not care about their own people. So this is not simply a circumstance of this is a regime that's buying food or medicine and that sanctions are closing up that channel. This is a circumstance where the regime has no care for its people and is happy to use that as an excuse to lessen the sanctions. The last point I'll make is that the UN has studied this. You know, the UN panel of experts has studied this, and they have, you know, they have shown that the sanctions have not had the stated effect on humanitarian operations. So, you know, there's some conjecture out there, but there hasn't been really any evidence that's been presented of it.
So, Anthony, what's the best strategy in your view for all of the countries participating in this conference in Vancouver, assuming that they have one goal, which is to stop North Korea from further developing its nuclear program or to denuclearize. What more could sanctions be doing now? What exactly should these countries be doing together, in your view, to stop North Korea's nuclear ambitions?
Right. A meeting of like-minded countries, as I like to describe it, is very similar to what happened with Iran. And I'm encouraged to see that coming together. You know, I think they can, you know, it certainly looks like one of the areas they're looking at is maritime interdictions. That's an area that needs to be focused on. You know, the North Korean shipping fleet is one that's very large and diverse. And as we learned late last year, it's using other vessels to do ship-to-ship transfers. So I think that's an area that can be focused on, you know, focusing in on the role of China and Russia. I think there, you know, there's certainly been some criticism that both of those countries are not in Canada, but the reason why they're not in Canada is because they're not partners in this effort. They are, the best word I could use is, in at some level, they're obstructionists when it comes to this. You know, the issue here is that sanctions are going to create the leverage for real denuclearization talks. And if barring that, it would allow these countries to protect themselves from North Korea's provocations and proliferation. We have to be cautious about the North-South, the inter-Korean talks. You know, this is really an effort by North Korea to try and delay sanctions. These are not, from my mind, real negotiations. The North Koreans have already gotten the U.S. and South Korea to delay military exercises. And now that they've pocketed that, the North Koreans are making further demands. And we have to remember, all North Korea is really doing is sending 500 people to the Olympics. So North Korea is not really doing anything, and we're sending them the wrong message. So I think that sanctions have to be used in combination with diplomacy. But this is not the diplomacy where we need to start to roll back sanctions.
Anthony Ruggiero, former U.S. government expert on targeted sanctions, currently senior fellow at the Foundation for Defensive Democracies. Anthony, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Tomorrow, we'll hear from the other side of this debate, someone who thinks that sanctions are not the way to get North Korea to the negotiating table.
The Takeaway is supported by Staples, offering storage solutions for business, including file folders, banker's boxes, and storage bins for getting organized. More at Staples Stores or staples.com. Staples, it's pro time.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.